Welcome back to the Colts Corner podcast. It's been 7 months, but season 5, episode 1 kicks off today. We will be talking about the NBA Finals, the MLB World Series, the NHL draft and free agency, and finally the NFL, and we'll have our topic of the week. Welcome back to the Colts Corner podcast. I am Constantine Lambridis alongside my colleagues Christian Selmayr, Jordan Cohen, and Tyler Wichman. We're back. Boys, how we doing?
Doing good. Excited to be back here. 7 months?
Seven months.
It's been a long time.
Of not being on the mic. We have Jordan, who was on some of our fantasy football podcasts last year, but I believe this is his first episode of Colts Corner. Let's get right into it.
Yeah. So we have a jam-packed episode of the Colts Corner podcast, and I think we are going to start off with the NBA Finals. The Los Angeles Lakers defeated the Miami Heat to win LeBron James's fourth championship in, I believe, 10 attempts now. First, let's get into it. LeBron won Finals MVP. Christian, what'd you think of his performance?
Obviously, his performance was just breathtaking. Like, he drew your attention every time he was on the court. You know, you wanted to watch him. You wanted to, you know, he drew your attention. He was an incredible player, incredible offense, incredible defense, incredible team play. And he just led them to that title incredibly. Tyler, Jordan, anything else?
You know, I felt his performance was good, but I don't think he led the team very well. I think that's almost my one criticism of him through the entire bubble. He really didn't show his leadership of the team at all. Like, he walked off the court. Was that in the finals? Which game was that?
Yeah, that was in the finals. I believe it was game 5 when the Miami Heat took game 5. He was walking off the court early. A lot of people were criticizing him about that. Honestly, rightfully so. That the sportsmanship just wasn't there. And I know I have a track record of hating on LeBron James on this show, but I think that we all can agree that that was a bit out of line there. And I think Tyler's right. He just didn't show a lot of leadership qualities, but in the end, I don't think he really had to, considering he had the beast, Anthony Davis.
That's true.
Yeah. At power forward. What a guy.
Yeah, he definitely got a lot of help in this series than his previous ones, where he won with the Cavs and the Heat. You know,
well, with the Cavs and the Heat, he had Dwayne Wade, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and Chris. I'm saying he had help.
I mean, pretty much every one of his championships.
He had help from the superstar.
But I would honestly
been a bigger role. He had a larger role in that team. He was like the center of the team, but now he has like another superstar to help him along the way.
Yeah, I would honestly make the case that Anthony Davis' performance in this playoffs was probably the best that he's ever gotten out of any teammate in any playoff situation that he's ever had.
Yeah, I think this is the first time in his career where he's had a teammate that's really on his like level. Like Dwayne Wade, Kyrie Irving, they're good.
That's my point.
But they're like a step below. Yeah, exactly. They're like a step
below. Yeah, but you
LeBron.
Can't forget about Bosh. Bosh in his prime, when they were the big three, he was great.
Yeah, Chris Bosh in his prime was probably one of the most reliable players in the league. He didn't have to take that star role. He could just kick back. You know he would grab boards. You know he would play amazing defense and get his points in when he needed to. He was just an all-around great player. And I think Anthony Davis is really Chris Bosh, just cranked up to 11. Like, in the finals, he had 25 points, 10 assists, 3 blocks, three assists, 2 blocks, and 1 steal per game on very impressive splits, 57% from the field, 42% from 3. He really stepped his game up for the playoffs, and he's never really gotten that chance.
One thing I just want to add on real quick, even though I did like the play of LeBron, I think the sportsmanship of the Lakers as a whole, and especially LeBron, was very poor. After most calls, you'd see LeBron with his favorite gesture of his hands out.
That's always been LeBron, but it was
very prominent in this playoffs, and it was kind of disappointing to see that, you know, they were just not really being the best sports, especially with what Anthony Davis did.
Yeah, so our resident LeBron fanboy, Ryan Dixon, who unfortunately isn't here today, couldn't join us today. He's in the blue cohort as opposed to the green cohort today. He talked at great length about LeBron's exploits on and off the court. We would go back and forth in amazing arguments here at the Colts Corner podcast. But even he admitted that LeBron James' sportsmanship was a little bit poor in the playoffs, and he admitted that he was actually rooting for the Heat, I believe. To quote him, the Heat are just too likable, which is what I believe he texted us.
Yeah, I mean, the Heat, incredible story. We got to talk about them. No one expected them to be here. Jimmy Butler, I mean, what a leader. Well, I mean, guys, what did you have to think about the Heat's performance in the playoffs?
His performance, he had to have the second best performance in the bubble. Next to Anthony Davis, I think he's the second best performance. He was incredible. And you could tell how much heart he was putting into every single game. I saw one video after a game in the finals where he was just walking off a press conference, like, almost like limping of soreness.
Yeah, at the end of game five, when he realized that there was no hope left, that he couldn't, he was doing everything he could. He was playing at his max intensity. There was a moment where you could just see him give up. He knew that it was too late.
How many teams did Butler actually help have a deep playoff run in the NBA playoffs?
I don't think he had a deep playoff run with any team. With the Minnesota Timberwolves, they were very close to making a good playoff run, yeah. But a couple injuries really derailed that. And he had a chance with the Philadelphia 76ers if it wasn't for Kawhi Leonard's Game 7 heroics with that shot. That must have bounced 27 times before it went in.
28,
definitely. It was a very, very, some people would say lucky shot, but I think Kawhi Leonard was just in a different zone there. Obviously, Jimmy Butler, just to get back on track, he played absolutely amazing in these playoffs. He gave everything that he had until the last moments, and you really have to commend him for that.
100%, 100%. Yeah.
Also, can't forget about Tyler Hero. Mm-hmm. Tyler Hero. The rookie putting up great numbers, clutching up in very important moments for the team. That was a good storyline of the bubble.
Yeah, Tyler Hero has probably become, next to Zion and Ja Morant, one of the most popular young players that has entered the league now. Was drafted 13th overall by the Miami Heat in the lottery last year. So another interesting part about the Miami Heat's journey is that they were actually a lottery team last year before Bam Adebayo's breakout, Kendrick Nunn arriving, Tyler Hero, and now Jimmy Butler, obviously.
I'm just curious, guys. What do you think? We just talked about who like the best performers of the bubble were and who was, you know, the breakout stars. But who do you think was the most disappointing team or player in the bubble that you had a lot higher expectations for that just didn't meet to what you think they would have?
Honestly, I think that's a tie between the Clippers and the Bucks. The Los Angeles Clippers were supposed to be the super team. They mortgaged their entire future for Paul George and literally rolled out the Brinks trucks for Kawhi Leonard in the offseason, yet they couldn't even make it past the second round against the Denver Nuggets. That's just a disappointment on so many different levels.
After being up 3-1,
I'm embarrassed for them. They need to work out everything during the offseason, and hopefully they can get it together, because that team should be one of the most entertaining teams in the league, and really, really disappointed.
I would say my biggest disappointment of the bubble is the Suns not making the playoffs. They went into the bubble with no hope. They go undefeated. They don't lose a single game, and yet they still just fall one game short. That was so disappointing for just any fan of the sport, any fan of an underdog.
Yeah, you love to see those underdog stories, especially in the NBA where parity is so rare. And the Phoenix Suns really felt like a breath of fresh air. And it was really disappointing to see them go undefeated and still lose out in the bubble. And I guess that's actually a segue into another topic that I wanted to discuss today. And that is, was the bubble unfair? Is there like an asterisk that needs to be put next to this finals or LeBron's championship run in general because of the unreal circumstances that we faced this year?
I think that the Lakers, I don't think there should be an asterisk next to it, just because it was still a normal season, nothing was really changed about it. But I think the Lakers did have an extraordinarily easy path through the bubble. I mean, they started off playing the Trailblazers, then they played the Rockets, and then they played the Nuggets, and then they got against the Heat in the finals, who really weren't a talented enough team to be winning the championship.
So well, I mean, if the Heat could take out the Bucks, the number one team in Giannis, I'd have to say that it's not like they're a joke. They're a I mean, the Heat I'm not saying
they're a bad team, but when you really think about the championship caliber teams of the past few years, you don't really think of the Heat as being up on that level.
Well, they proved that. They proved it this year that they are. They proved that they're up there. Just because no one thought of them as a championship caliber team doesn't mean that they can't be. They clearly show that they have the ability to be, and especially coming up in this in the next offseason, if they sign even more free agents, then that team is just going to get even more stacked.
This actually brings me to something that I really wanted to talk about here, and that was LeBron and the Lakers' supposedly easy run to a championship. And there's a basketball analyst by the name of Jimmy Highroller who records videos on YouTube. And he used something called SRS, or Simple Rating System, a statistic created by, I believe, Basketball Reference, that takes the average point differential of the teams that they face and weighs it against strength of schedule. And he provided an analysis of the Los Angeles Lakers championship run, and this is what he came up with. Excuse me.
Rockets having the most difficult path to a championship and the 1987 Lakers having the easiest path to a championship. This list only includes championships dating back to the 1984 season, since that is when the 16-team playoff system was introduced. So, with the last 37 championship teams listed, where do the 2020 Lakers land? All the way down at 35th. In the last 37 seasons, only two championship teams faced easier competition than the Lakers faced in this season's playoffs.
So the Lakers SRS score here turned out to be a 7.46, which is 35th out of 37th all time, as they faced the Portland Trail Blazers, the Denver Nuggets in the conference finals, and in the semifinals in the NBA finals they faced the Miami Heat. And the semifinals, they faced the Houston Rockets. So that was just an interesting stat that I don't think it really changes anything, but it's just something that we can use to score the NBA Finals and the NBA playoffs in general, with so much hysteria going on about how this was an easier run. I don't know if this confirms it, but it's just something interesting to look at.
Yeah, it was a really good start. Thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate that soundbite. Thank you for playing that audio clip on the podcast. You know, really, really added to the whole experience.
All right. And I think we're going to switch gears now to the MLB World. The World Series is currently going on between the Tampa Bay Rays and the super team Los Angeles Dodgers. But the Rays actually came out on top in game two, evening the series out 1-1 after a win over the aforementioned Dodgers. They will be playing each other on Saturday at 8:08 p.m. I just want to go back to this game and get a couple stats. The Tampa Bay Rays defeated the Dodgers 6-4, and the Dodgers actually their first score was a home run. They couldn't get the bats going early. Mookie Betts had three at-bats, walked once, struck out once, and that was pretty much what happened with the rest of the team. Cody Bellinger, who's usually raking, only had one walk, and that was all he did to get on base. He went up to bat three times. And the only person who was really doing anything out there was Seager, who went up to bat four times and scored one run with two hits and one RBI. That works out to an average of 33% and an on-base of 55%.
I just want to say something about how the MLB kind of handled their bubble compared to the NHL and NBA, or lack thereof a bubble. There wasn't one central arena or city. You know, they went to each arena for each game, which I think was pretty impressive that there wasn't too many cases. And I'd say the MLB did a pretty good job of handling their coronavirus bubble.
Yeah, they had quite a few hiccups in the beginning. Obviously, the Miami Marlins incident, where a lot of their players contracted the virus. But overall, it was more smooth sailing.
Well, yeah, they kept the games within, like, in different geographical locations of the U.S. So, like, all the teams on the East Coast would play each other. They would never play teams, like, on the West Coast or Central or to the South or anything like that. So they would see a lot of the same competition over and over again throughout the season. So it, for some teams, I think it made it a little bit easier to get into the playoffs, especially since it was also expanded this year because of coronavirus.
I kind of think, well, I think they handled it well in the fact that there weren't so many breakouts of teams. But the problem is with baseball is that the games are so stacked onto each other that as soon as one team gets it,
what
and
do you
then
mean
you
stacked onto each other?
Like the games are like you'll have times where a team will play three games in 3 days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's so not all even saying including is, doubleheaders.
Yeah, it's not well, yeah. The thing is that they're forced to have doubleheaders. Once a team misses 14 days, they now have to fix like say like 8 to like even maybe like 11 games that they have to play doubleheaders. So I just think as soon as you get one case, it's just so hard for baseball to work it out because of how stacked the schedules are.
Yeah, while the NBA season may not need an asterisk next to it, I believe the MLB season definitely does, considering they played 100 less games they normally do.
Yeah.
Teams are getting into the playoffs that probably shouldn't have gotten into the playoffs. But
and plus, like Jordan said, because of the regional matchups,
yeah, and
how
the regional
like
matchups.
The NL East only played the NL East and the AL East and nothing else. I think that definitely, I can definitely say that the MLB season definitely needs an asterisk to it.
Yeah.
Oh, especially with like 60 games being played, it reduces player stats, pitching stats, it reduces everything. So you can't even compare it to previous seasons. If you wanted to make comparisons in the future between like a player's stats in 2020 and their stats in a previous year.
Yeah, this season was definitely wild. The NHL, actually, their free agency is pretty much done with a couple surprises, notably Taylor Hall going to the Buffalo Sabres on a one-year, $8 million deal to prove his worth. I can imagine he didn't get as the market that he was really anticipating, so he signed this one-year deal with the Sabres so he could play out a season finally healthy. Alex Pietrangelo, former Blues captain, scoring 52 points in 70 games, and then he's kicked to the curb by the St. Louis Blues in favor of former Bruins defenseman Torrey Krug. He said that he felt betrayed. Now Pietrangelo is looking to the Vegas Golden Knights and will ink a deal worth $8.8 million a year until the 2026-2027 season. He's currently 30 years old. The Vegas Golden Knights considering physical defenseman, big defenseman's sharp decline into their later years.
I mean, I think that the Golden Knights could definitely use another piece in their roster, especially because of how they came so close this year. Obviously, Western Conference Finals, I believe. And they lost to the Dallas Stars, who are an incredible team, Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, to one of the best duos in the league, in my opinion. But I think the Golden Knights could definitely benefit from some pickups and free agency. And, I mean, I think that as an expansion team, they've exceeded everyone's expectations. They've been doing incredibly well. So I'm excited to see what some new additions to their roster is going to do to them next season.
Yeah, definitely a solid addition for Vegas. And moving on to the NHL draft, fortunately, my New York Rangers were selecting first overall and were able to pick generational talent Alexi Lafreniere from Rimouski Oceanic. This is a quick synopsis on his play.
He's ready to contribute. What does contributing mean? It means that you're going to get 60 points or more in your initial fall season in the NHL. He attacks the net. He attacks the areas where you get rewarded. He has an edge to his game. There is no style of game that he cannot excel at. Skill, skating, power, tight games, important games, critical moments. He delivers it all for a team. No question.
Now, 60 points in 82 games. Do you think that's a little ambitious for a first-year player, even with Lafreniere's skill set and expectations?
I still think that's pretty ambitious. I mean, what did Connor McDavid do his first season?
He was injured, I believe, for 20
games.
His first full season. I believe he scored, like, around 100 points. But I mean, I think he had more hype than Lafreniere.
I mean,
coming
how would you compare the hype of Connor McDavid and Lafreniere?
I would say that Connor McDavid was
a lot more.
Has completely lived up to the hype.
Yes.
And Lafreniere, I'd say, both generational talents, both dominated their respective junior divisions. I think that Connor McDavid definitely had a little more hype surrounding him coming out than Lafreniere, just because of his more flashy play and probably is a more skilled player. So if I were to project where he's going, honestly, I think that the 60 points would be a solid representation of where he was, where he's hoping to be at after his first season.
I think it's reasonable. I definitely think it's in the upper echelon of what he can achieve. I don't see him getting much more than that. I don't see him having a McDavid-type season right now. I just don't think that's what he's going to be. Maybe in a couple seasons he'll be getting those, you know, 70, 80-point seasons. But for his first season, I don't see him going much higher than 60.
And the New York Islanders also trying to get their free agency going. Matthew Barzal, a restricted free agent. The Islanders have $8 million in cap space, and they need to sign Barzal, but apparently there's a mutual feeling to get a deal done. If the Islanders are to get a deal done with Barzal, do you think that they would have to use up their remaining cap space of $8 million, or what do you think the deal will look like?
Well, in my opinion, and I've been doing some research, I think the Barzal does want to stay on the Islanders. He definitely has that attitude, especially after this season. You know, coming from a team that wasn't making the playoffs to a team that was in the semifinals of the Eastern Conference, losing to a tough Tampa Bay Lightning team, you know, one of the best teams in the league. I definitely think that, you know, they might not even have to use a cap space on him. But honestly, I think that, yeah, Barzal is definitely going to be staying, and I think the Islanders are going to be a playoff-caliber team next season and maybe a couple seasons to come.
I'm sure they will be. The Islanders' first selection in that draft was in the third round, where they selected Alexander Lundqvist out of the SHL, a really Lou Lamoriello-type player, gritty winger, gets into the corners, does the dirty work. He probably won't be coming up to the NHL for a couple seasons, but I'm sure he'll be a fan favorite by the time that he makes his New York Islanders debut. And now moving along to the NFL, a lot is going on.
Let's go, baby. First win, Washington football team. Get out of here. One game away from number one pick and number one in the division. What more could you ask for as a Giants fan right now?
Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff.
It could be going any better for the Giants right now, honestly. They can either step up and win the division, or they can keep playing poor like they've been doing the past few seasons and still get a very high draft pick. So
poor. Did you see that performance against the football team?
Well, you could also – they could get a high draft pick and win the division, with the division being so terrible too. I mean, someone did the calculations, and the champion of the NFC East could have a 4-16 record. Could you imagine that?
That's unbelievable.
Could you imagine the 4-16 Giants going against like the 10-6 49ers in the first round of the playoffs? It's a possibility.
That would be must watch TV. And Thursday night football tonight, definitely.
Not 4-16, 4-12.
Well, still terrible.
One matchup that I want to talk about from week six, another NFC matchup. But between two actually pretty high-caliber teams, I got to say, Packers versus Buccaneers, that shocked me. I am beyond. My mind is blown. I did not expect the Buccaneers to pull away with a 38-10 win over Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones and the Packers. Guys, what did you think about that game?
Yeah, the Packers were supposed to come out firing. The Buccaneers
and
defense,
they did. They got a 10-0 lead in the first quarter.
Yeah, but then after that, they kind of fell off a cliff very fast. Aaron Rodgers had a poor performance for him. He would say it's other quarterbacks' career performances. He went 16 for 35 with 160 yards and two interceptions on the day. Definitely not what we're accustomed to for Aaron Rodgers and that Packers offense. Tom Brady had similar stats in terms of yardage, but definitely different in efficiency. 17 for 27, 166 yards and two passing TDs. One of them was to his old friend Rob Gronkowski, who had his first breakout game as a Buccaneer with 78 yards, one touchdown, and five receptions on the day.
Yeah, and a 28-point second quarter for the Buccaneers is really what, you know, that basically just sealed the deal already, even before the first half had ended. Another play I want to talk about, Ronald Jones II, who put up a very impressive game. He had 113 rushing yards, two touchdowns on 23 carries, in addition to 8 yards receiving. Yeah, I mean, just when you think of the offense of that Tampa Bay team, I know the first couple of games, everyone was saying about how good that offense was. I mean, you have Tom Brady, who might not be as good as he used to be, but he's still a very talented top-tier quarterback. You have Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones, and Mike Evans, and no Chris Godwin yet. But, you know, you also have Gronk, who, you know, he might not be, you know, elite like he was, but he can get it done when he needs to. So I definitely think this is the game where that Buccaneers offense really got everything together and showed what they're made of.
Yeah, they definitely impressed with this outing. Another matchup that I think that we need to talk about is, we were discussing it a little bit earlier, but I think we need to go more into depth with it. The Washington football team and the New York Giants capturing their first win on the season. A 20-19 thriller ends with the Giants' first victory. What were your impressions of the Giants, guys?
I mean, the Giants' defense really just showed out, right? They it could be argued that they did, like, almost carry the team with a pick, a scoop and score at the end, which broke the tie 13-13, became 20-13, and it was getting close near the end, but the Giants held out. So it was impressive by the defense, especially on that two-point conversion at the end, stopping that, you know, could have costed them the game.
Yeah, one thing I do want to talk about that has been going on for a while now is, although Daniel Jones didn't have the best game in terms of throwing, he was our best rushing player, and he has been our best rushing player for the past few games, despite we have Devontae Freeman, who's a very solid running back, in my opinion, that Daniel Jones had more yards on less than half the carries. He averaged 10.6 yards per carry. As a quarterback, that's insane, and it's not like he's Lamar Jackson or anything, so I definitely think that, you know, Daniel Jones is really stepping up in ways he can. Even if his receiving core isn't what he'd like it to be, he still knows that he's fast, he can handle the ball, and he can rush it when he needs to. So I just think that's a stat that's very interesting and very important.
Yeah, Daniel Jones definitely has that subtle mobility when he's running for his life behind that less than average O-line, we'll call it. And something that I wanted to bring up, our friend Samuel Mendelson, big Giants fan, says that the Giants should tank for Trevor Lawrence as opposed to letting Daniel Jones do what he has to do in his second year in the league. What do you think, being Giants fans, of Daniel Jones's progress so far? Is it what you want to see right now, and where can he go from here?
I think he's kind of looking like he's just progressing into the average NFL starter quarterback role, like almost like the Joe Flacco, where nobody ever knows if they're truly elite or not.
Not Joe Flacco this past week, but you know, like
we'll get to him later.
Joe Flacco a few years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think he'll always probably be one of those quarterbacks where he's nothing special, but he's not bad either. He just does the job and nothing more, nothing less.
I think to be considered an elite QB or to be on that elite quarterback trajectory, I think you need to have like a really good breakout season your second or third year, kind of like Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson kind of did. I think that's how you really get on that track to being that franchise guy.
Well, and I mean, Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes, they didn't really have like one season where they kind of just played decent and played okay. Yeah. I mean, they played a little bit in like the rookie season, and they really just like out of nowhere. They didn't have as much time to develop as Daniel Jones has. So I don't know if that's, you know, the best comparison. But yeah, I definitely think that he's developing a little bit. You just got to, you know, get used to the speed of the game, especially when, like you said, playing behind that less than stellar O-line. But I definitely have high hopes for DJ.
Yeah, and finally, to wrap up some of the New York teams that people are hearing about, the New York Jets were thrashed 24-0 by Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Miami Dolphins. I'm a Jets fan, and I'm currently on a New York Jets boycott. I'm not watching any New York Jets games, nor wearing any New York Jets apparel or paraphernalia. So I did not get to watch this game, thankfully. But I do want to bring up a man who definitely watched the game. I don't know if he did more than just watch. But Adam Gase, who gave a post-game presser about his team.
I honestly don't know if he watched the game.
Yeah, I'm just being honest with you. I want to bring up some of his quotes during a post-game interview, and I want to discuss them with you guys a bit because They make me upset, and I think they'll make you guys I think they'll bring you joy.
Adam, it's kind of the same thing every week about fixing things and it's not getting fixed. What makes you believe that you can still fix this?
I mean, it's different things. I mean, it's just, you know, keep running when we got a guy beat, you know. I mean, it's making sure when we pick up a blitz, we physically get the guy removed from the hole to where the quarterback doesn't have a guy in his lap. You know, it's, you know, this game was way less mental issues. It was physical.
So do you agree with Adam Gase? Are the Jets' problems more they're physically bad or they're mentally not a good, smart football team?
I mean, he was kind of pitting blame on the players a little bit there, which both of those things, whether they're bad physically or they're bad mentally, those are both his fault. So, I don't know. That's a weird thing for him to say, pitting blame on others instead of himself.
How many NFL coaches are going to be like, all right, it's my fault. I'm terrible. I'm the worst coach ever. Everything that's wrong with this team is my fault.
I don't know if they're going to say that, but I feel like there have been coaches who have said, you know what, this game, I really
there have
didn't
definitely
do
been
my
coaches,
job as well as I should have.
There have definitely been coaches who have accepted the blame for a loss. I know Sean McVay did that after the Super Bowl. And one other thing that I want to bring up is this Adam Gase quote, where he was asked about his job performance and if he's worried that he'll be leaving anytime soon.
The results not changing every week, that Christopher might want to make a change?
No, I mean, I'm not even thinking about it. I have to focus on making sure our guys are ready to go when we get back in the building on Monday and Wednesday and Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then getting ready for this next game.
So is Adam Gase being truthful here? Does he care about his job at all? Does he or is he worrying about the time that he has left with the organization, or is he truly just brushing it off, ready to go for next week?
I mean, I think he knows that his job is definitely in question. I don't think he thinks that everything's perfect, that everything's just, you know, roses and rainbows. He knows that something's wrong and that if one more thing goes wrong, his job could be gone just like that. Even if he doesn't, you know, show that, he knows that 100%. So I definitely think he's just going to, you know, really try focusing on getting some good quality play, getting a win, so maybe he can stay the coach of the New York Jets just a few games longer.
To wrap up our NFL section, to go on topic of the week, Thursday Night Football, New York Giants, Philadelphia Eagles. If the Giants win today and the Cowboys lose this week, the Giants will be first place in their division. I want to hear predictions for this game.
I don't see the Giants performing well. Their team's really just not there. And they kind of were relying on Saquon for a lot of those offensive yards. So without him, they really are struggling. I think they could win against the Eagles, but I don't see them making playoffs just because they don't have the talent at all.
No, yeah, I definitely think they can win tonight's game, especially with half the Eagles team on the injured reserve. It's a long list of players. You know, with the Giants injured Saquon Barkley, it kind of evens the playing field a little bit because Saquon was most of that offense, and it reflects in Daniel Jones' play this year as well.
And the quarterback duo of Carson Wentz versus Daniel Jones, I mean, those are two pretty decent quarterbacks. I would say Carson Wentz is probably higher than Daniel Jones. He's definitely a higher caliber player. That's going to be an interesting duel to see between those two. I'm excited for the game, and I think it's going to be an entertaining game. So, yeah.
I think this will definitely be an entertaining game. I have the Giants coming out with a win with this one, just accounting for the Eagles being banged up. Zach Ertz was announced today, out 4 to 6 weeks. Miles Sanders will not be participating in this contest. Carson Wentz has had a lackluster season. He's thrown 7 picks and 4 touchdowns, so that TD INT ratio isn't looking good. I think the Giants can surprise a lot of people and really take the league by storm, come out with the win here, and hopefully gain some momentum going into the next couple weeks.
Right, so to end it off, we got topic of the week.
All right, anyone want to start us off?
I could start us off. My topic of the week is, I know this is very highly debated every day, what is everyone's favorite water brand of water?
It's got to be Poland Spring.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go Poland Spring on that one.
I don't think, I may just be acclimated to Poland Spring more so than other water brands. Yeah, Mr. Rashudi saying it's delicious water. The peanut gallery is. I couldn't have put it any better myself.
The one thing I will add, whenever I am at the house of someone who has the glorious gift of a Costco membership, you know, Kirkland Signature water every once in a while is nice. Yeah, I will say that much.
I don't really have a favorite water. I don't think any Kirkland Signature is my treat. I don't think any bottled water is necessarily better than any others.
But they taste different.
But I know that some bottled waters are definitely worse than others.
Dasani.
Dasani is terrible.
I don't think Dasani's terrible. I think Deer Park water. And honestly, I know this might be an unpopular opinion, but I think Fiji water. I do not like Fiji water.
Fiji water is so overrated.
The peanut gallery agrees with me here. Yep. Full agreement.
But honestly, I don't know if any of you have had Evian. Evian water.
Evian water is good. It's smart water. Smart water.
Evian water is absolutely terrible. The taste is bland. And you may say that water has a uniform taste, but Evian's taste is bland. I hate it with everything I have. I'm a Poland Springer for life.
Yeah, I think in terms of, let's just talk about basic waters like your Poland Springer, Dasani. I think Poland Springer and Kirkland Signature are probably the best.
I would have to go with that too. But also, I don't think I had a different brand of water besides Kirkland Springs water since for years now. I don't know. I can't even remember. I've been drinking this water for so long.
All right. I think I'll go next. So my topic of the week is, what is your favorite snack food that's not a candy? So no Starburst, no Skittles, no Twix. That's not a candy, regular snack food.
This is a tough one. You know, I have a few. I think pretzel rods are an easy go-to. Pretzel rods are very good.
Not a pretzel person, actually.
I'm a big chip guy. If there's a bowl of chips in front of me, I'm usually good at restraining myself with, like, most food, but chips. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I love chips. I love chips. I'm a chip guy.
Honestly, I'm going to have to go with, I love cookies, but Oreos probably.
That's a candy. Didn't you say Oreos? Oreos not a candy.
How is Oreos?
We're not getting into another candy debate. Okay. We're not doing that today.
We'll save that for episode.
Yeah,
we'll save that for episode two.
We're not getting into another candy debate. I love cookies. I don't think Oreos, I don't think are a candy. I think it's more of a junk food. It's more of a snack food. Okay. But I'm not
willing to save this one to another. That's not the point
of
this debate.
If we get a chance to have Ryan here, I think he'd love to have this debate with us.
Yeah, we'll save this for another time. I've also lately, I've just been sitting down to like bowls of like peas. I don't know why, but it's a great vegetable. It's a great snack.
Peas are like one food that I just hate. I can't have. I love vegetables. I love my broccoli and my spinach, my green beans, but I can't stand peas. They ruin whatever they touch. I hate peas so much. I hate them. No. You have peas in a dish, you know, a nice balanced dish, and you can just taste the peas even if you take them out. I hate peas. I hate peas. But I like popcorn. I've been having a lot of popcorn lately. Popcorn's good.
Yeah, I got to say that. I like popcorn, too. That's
proper microwave popcorn. Yeah. Like, I'm not a Pirate Booty fan. I like my popcorn well done. I like it microwaved, personally. Yeah. Just nothing beats movie theater popcorn.
I think my preference would be kettle corn. I mean, kettle corn. Kettle corn is the top tier popcorn.
One thing that's nice about popcorn, it's basically the same thing as chips for me. You can just eat a bowl, but it's a lot healthier, which is, you know, nice that I can just feel good about making a big bowl of popcorn, which is good. And I like that.
Okay, I guess I'll go. So what do you think is the best professional or college team color scheme?
That's a tough one. I think I'm going to have to go with Oregon or UNC.
Oregon's a good one.
Oregon has a bunch of different jerseys and a bunch of different colors. Personally, I love all of them. I know that's more of a basic opinion. A lot of people love Oregon's color scheme. But every year they're bringing their A game. They're bringing out absolute heat to every game. Home games are crazy. Oregon's doing great.
For me, this might be unpopular, but I really like the Jets' new colors. I just think they look really nice. And Penn State wrestling, their mat, their singlets are awesome. I'm not a Penn State wrestling guy personally, but their mat, their singlets are top tier, and they're very aesthetically pleasing.
I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of purple. So I like the Ravens. I like the Ravens, and I like the Vikings. Like the purple and black and the purple and gold are just.
I think the Vikings' usage of purple is much better than the Ravens, in my opinion.
Yeah, the Ravens' purple is more dreary. Well, I get that's like kind of their thing because Edgar Allan Poe and all that. But the Vikings, it seems so menacing. The Vikings, like I don't want to, like the purple people eaters. I don't want to go up against them.
I'd probably go with, like, Florida and Auburn. I like that orange and blue aesthetic. I think that's a great color. It really, like, pops and grabs everyone's attention.
It's a good one.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one.
Okay, Christian's topic.
For my topic of the week, what is one song, artist, or band that you just never got, like, You know people like them, and it's not like something where like country. You know a country singer's talented, you just don't like country. But, like you just saw one artist, and you just didn't get it. You didn't like the sound. You just didn't like what was going on, even if you like the genre.
I gotta say, X. I do not like his music.
X. I gotta agree. I don't find it
enjoyable. I know a lot of people do enjoy him though.
Look, I think I feel bad for his actual core fan base because now, since he's passed. He really has there's really been infiltration in his fan base by people who saying they've always been there and listening to his music.
Those
and
normies,
I think they're really
bro.
Trying to cater to those people now with his new posthumous releases, and I think that it's definitely diminishing his legacy.
Any other takes on that artist that you never got?
You know, probably Harry Styles. I know a lot of people that like Harry Styles, but I just... Come on, I mean, Mr. Doxy.
Yeah, watermelon that
sugar.
Is a fire.
Okay, it's catchy.
Okay. That is a banger.
Catchy. Okay, watermelon
it's a catchy,
sugar is a very catchy song.
It's catchy,
it's
but it's terrible.
A very good song. It is
musically,
awful
it is
song.
A terrible
at
song.
At work
musically,
in the summer, and I worked in a warehouse. It was like they'd play the same like five songs, and even I started to hate all of them slowly but surely. But Watermelon Sugar High was the one that I hated the least. So
you hate it the least.
It's not a bad song. Just when you hear the same X amount of songs every day, it gets a little tiring. But I think Harry Styles is pretty solid.
Not a fan. I never got into it. Not a fan at all.
And Mr. Cohen, ending off the podcast with the last take.
Honestly, I haven't been listening to a ton of music recently or new artists. So my take there would kind of be
probably
obsolete.
I know your favorite song, Burger King commercial background music, 2016.
Oh, man. You got me.
It's okay. It's
okay.
Bad.
Okay, Christian, do you have one?
I said I agree with you on X.
Okay.
All right. Well, I guess this wraps up Season 5, Episode 1 of the Colts Corner podcast. As always, we would like to take this time to thank Mr. Doxy, Mr. Rashudi, Dr. Catapano, the administration of the class of 2016 for their generous donation to our podcast setup. We really couldn't do it without them. Signing off for the first time this year, Christian Selmayr, Constantine Lambridis, Tyler Wichman, Jordan Cohen, and we will see you next time.
Wear your mask, wash your hands, bye.